generic AI news day. The useful thread is operational boundaries. Who decides when AI becomes part of your browser, your voice interface, your security model, your fuzzing tools, and your memory stack?
Right. The headline that forces the question is the report that Google Chrome is downloading a full gigabyte Gemini Nano model onto user machines without clear consent. That is not just a feature complaint. It is a boundary question about local compute, user control, and product defaults.
The phrase that stuck with me is silent local AI deployment. If a browser can quietly add a large model, then the browser is no longer just fetching pages. It is starting to carry local model infrastructure as part of the runtime.
And that changes the shape of consent. Users already accept that browsers download many dependencies, caches, codecs, safe browsing data, and update packages. A local model is different because the resource footprint is large and the purpose is tied to AI behavior, not only rendering the web.
We will handle that as the deep dive. First, we will move through the radar, Chrome and Gemini Nano, OpenAI's low-latency voice stack, RUSI adding libFAL support, a Chroma maintenance release, and Google's prompt injection threat work.
The map is coherent. One item is about implicit local deployment, one is about explicit real-time infrastructure, one is about security testing, one is about retrieval plumbing, and one is about prompt injection as an agent-era threat surface.
Good. Let us start with the Chrome item, but keep the caveats visible from the beginning. The report is consequential, but it is not the same as an official Google policy explanation.
Exactly. The claim we can discuss is what the source and reaction describe. Chrome downloading a 4 GB Gemini Nano model, no ordinary opt-in, no simple consumer opt-out, except enterprise tooling, and re-download behavior after deletion.
Why does that immediately rise above ordinary product annoyance?
Because scale changes the ethics and operations. A 4 GB model on a developer workstation, a laptop with limited disk, or a managed fleet is not a trivial cached asset. If it arrives silently and returns after removal, the user's mental model of control is broken.
The automatic re-download is the detail that makes it feel sticky. If I remove a file and the browser restores it, I have learned something about who controls the state of the machine.
Yes, that is why the reaction is not only privacy language. People are also talking about power, RAM, disk, and the environmental concern of model distribution at browser scale. The environmental part should stay framed as a concern, not a quantified conclusion.
A skeptical reaction also matters here. One person asked what kinds of dependencies should require consent. Every dependency above a gigabyte, every dependency with AI behavior?
That is the fair challenge. Browsers are already complicated dependency managers. They ship rendering engines, media stacks, language packs, security lists, update frameworks, and hardware acceleration paths. The question is not whether every byte needs a pop-up. The question is when a dependency crosses into user-visible policy.
My instinct is that size, compute, persistence, and purpose are the four signals. A large model that can consume local resources and returns after deletion feels different from a normal cache.
I agree. The re-download behavior is especially important because it turns deletion into a temporary gesture. It tells the user that the browser's policy wins over the user's cleanup action unless an administrator has an enterprise control.
That enterprise versus consumer split is worth slowing down on. Enterprise tooling may provide control, but most individual users are not operating Chrome through a fleet policy system.
Which means the practical opt-out may be inaccessible to the very people who are most likely to notice the disk or memory footprint. That is a design problem even before we reach legal or privacy questions.
There was also a comparison to an earlier Claude desktop case. The briefing treats that as a pattern comparison, not as proof that the cases are identical.
But correct. The comparison is about large AI assets appearing as application managed state. The browser scale is the differentiator. A desktop application affects its installed user base. Chrome potentially touches an enormous population and many kinds of machines.
Let us contrast that with OpenAI's voice stack. There, the story is much more explicit. OpenAI described rebuilding its WebRTC stack for low-latency voice AI.
That item is a cleaner architecture signal. The claim is not that voice is always better. It is that real-time voice only feels conversational when connection setup is fast, reach is global, and latency supports natural turn-taking.
Why does that matter to agent workflows rather than only ChatGPT voice calls?
Because interactive agents may need to listen while a user speaks, interrupt gracefully, hand off between modalities, and preserve context across spoken and written state. If the transport layer is slow or fragile, the agent feels clumsy no matter how good the model is.
There is also skepticism in the reaction. Some people find advanced voice less useful for dense technical answers because written interaction lets you inspect, copy, and revisit details.
That skepticism is healthy. Voice can be faster for orientation and back-and-forth clarification, but text is often better for exact commands, code, citations, and durable decisions. The best agent interface probably moves between the two rather than declaring one winner.
That gives us a useful contrast. OpenAI is saying, here is explicit infrastructure for real-time AI. The Chrome story raises the opposite concern. AI infrastructure may be arriving implicitly.
Yes. Explicit infrastructure asks developers and users to adopt a capability. Implicit infrastructure changes the baseline environment. Those are very different trust contracts.
The third radar item moves into security tooling. Trail of Bits added libFile support to RUSI, their coverage-guided fuzzer for Ruby code and Ruby C extensions.
This is a practical security engineering item. RUSI gives Ruby developers and security researchers fuzzing access. Adding libFL support matters because libFL is a modern Rust-based framework, while LLVM's libfuzzer is in maintenance mode.
The claims around libFL include performance, modularity, modern fuzzing techniques, and compatibility with libfuzzer. We should treat those as project claims rather than independently verified benchmarks.
Exactly. The safe takeaway is workflow direction, not benchmark victory. Ruby developers may get a more actively developed fuzzing path without changing the way they write fuzzing harnesses.
That has a bridge back to agent systems too. As agents touch more code, tool boundaries, and runtime environments, the quality of security testing matters more.
And fuzzing is one of the disciplines that keeps us honest. It finds weird edge cases without relying on the developer to imagine every failure mode. In an agent-heavy world, weird edge cases are not rare decorations. They are the work surface.
The fourth item is Chroma. The captured release signal is maintenance-heavy and relevant to memory infrastructure, but it is not clean enough to treat as a big feature story.
Right. The release appears to touch areas like rebuilds, compaction, grouping, fault injection tooling, topology database protections, and debugging cleanup. Those are operationally relevant, but the extraction had changelog residue, so we should not overstate the impact.
For Chris's stack, Chroma belongs in the agent memory lane. It is retrieval plumbing, not a model announcement.
That is the right framing. Memory systems become interesting when they are reliable under change, rebuilds, compaction, grouping behavior, failure injection, and predictable operational state. Those are not glamorous, but they are the things that decide whether durable knowledge works in practice.
The fifth radar item is Google's threat intelligence post on indirect prompt injection.
That item keeps the security posture active. The post frames indirect prompt injection as a priority for the security community and asks whether threat actors are exploiting the vector in the wild, for tool, using agents that is directly relevant.
It overlaps recent coverage, which is why we should not pretend it is a wholly new deep dive today.
Exactly. The useful update is watch posture. The more agents read web pages, emails, documents, repositories, dashboards, and chat messages, the more the environment becomes part of the threat model.
That ties back to the day nicely. The boundary is not just inside the model. It is in the browser, the transport, the tooling, the retrieval store, and the page content the agent consumes.
And that is why the Chrome story deserves the deepest treatment. It makes the boundary visible on the user's own machine.
Let us slow down on Chrome and Gemini Nano. If we strip away outrage, what is the cleanest version of the concern?
The clean concern is this. A browser reportedly installs a large local AI model, makes the ordinary consumer control path unclear or absent, and restores the model after deletion. That combines local resource use, persistence, AI purpose, and weak user agency.
The weak user agency part is doing a lot of work. The issue is not merely that software updates itself. Browsers update all the time.
Correct. Automatic updates can be good. Security updates are essential. The distinction is that a large local model is not just a security patch. It is a capability with compute, memory, disk, privacy, and policy implications.
What would make the situation less concerning?
Clear disclosure, visible settings, predictable storage behavior, a consumer-accessible control, and documentation explaining when the model is used. Enterprise policy is useful, but it is not a substitute for user-visible control on personal machines.
What would make it more concerning?
If the model is invoked in broad browsing contexts without clear visibility, if it consumes resources in ways users cannot inspect, if deletion is repeatedly reversed, or if the same pattern expands to larger local models without an explicit control surface.
One of the tricky parts is that browsers are already trusted with enormous responsibility. They sandbox pages, store passwords, manage permissions, update engines, and mediate hardware access.
Exactly. That is why the consent threshold cannot simply be, did the browser download a file? The threshold has to consider what the file does, how large it is, whether it persists, whether it changes local compute behavior, and whether users can govern it.
I want to make the enterprise control angle concrete. If a company can disable or manage the behavior through policy, that acknowledges the behavior matters operationally.
Yes. Enterprise policy is a signal that administrators may need control for bandwidth, disk, compliance, privacy, and fleet stability. The consumer question is why a comparable plain language control is not obvious to the individual user.
There is a risk that people hear this and conclude local AI is bad by default. That is not the point.
Not at all. Local AI can be privacy. Preserving compared with sending data to a server. It can reduce latency, support offline behavior, and keep some processing on device. The concern is not local models. The concern is silent defaults without clear governance.
That distinction matters for local inference and routing. Chris is explicitly interested in dense local routing, local model serving, and memory-aware agents.
Right. In a deliberate local inference setup, the operator chooses a model, checks disk and RAM, monitors load, manages routing, and knows what is running. A silent browser managed model bypasses that operator mindset.
It also changes budgeting. A 4 GB asset is not just abstract storage. It affects machines differently depending on disk pressure, memory pressure, network caps, and whether the device is shared or managed.
And it affects trust. If an application re-downloads something after deletion, a technical user starts asking where the policy lives, how it is triggered, how to audit it, and how to disable it without fighting the updater.
The community reaction includes power and RAM concerns. We should not claim measurements we do not have, but the class of concern is real.
Exactly. We can say resource concerns are raised. We cannot say the model is consuming a specific amount of power or memory in active use unless the evidence measures it. That is the evidence boundary.
There is also the environmental angle. At browser scale, even small per device costs can be large in aggregate, but today we only have concern, not a quantified climate accounting.
That is an important caveat. The environmental question is plausible and worth asking. It is not settled by the current evidence. A responsible version would need distribution counts, update frequency, active use patterns, energy measurement, and life cycle assumptions.
What about the temporary outage? One thread participant could not access the source. Does that weaken the story?
It weakens the discussion layer, not necessarily the underlying claim. It tells us that some reaction was happening while not everyone could inspect the full article. That is a reason to keep the story provisional and look for replication or official clarification.
So the watch posture should be strong interest, not absolute conclusion.
Yes, strong interest because the described behavior is consequential. Provisional conclusion because official confirmation and independent replication would matter.
What would independent replication look like here?
A clear report showing where the model appears on disk, how large it is, what Chrome component or feature triggers it, what happens after deletion, whether settings or flags change it, and whether enterprise policy behaves as described.
What would official clarification need to answer?
It would need to explain purpose, deployment scope, storage behavior, activation conditions, opt-out paths, enterprise controls, and user-facing disclosure. It would also need to explain why the control model differs between managed fleets and individual users.
That is the browser governance side. Let us connect it to OpenAI's voice stack again. OpenAI's post is also about infrastructure, but it is almost the inverse trust posture.
Exactly. OpenAI is saying voice AI needs low latency transport and global reach, and here is the engineering surface. Users may still dislike voice for dense work, but the infrastructure is being discussed openly as infrastructure.
With Chrome, the anxiety is that the infrastructure appears before the conversation about control. And my beefing with they is that the infrastructure and for the...
That is the core difference. Explicit infrastructure lets developers decide whether to build on it. Implicit infrastructure changes the baseline environment and asks users to discover the change after the fact.
This also makes me think about agent UX. A real-time voice agent may feel natural only if the transport is fast, but it is useful only if state, memory, and controls are visible.
Yes. Speed without governability is not enough. An agent that responds instantly but hides state, tools, memory, or local resources can become harder to trust than a slower system with clear boundaries.
Chroma fits into that because memory infrastructure is all about persistent state.
Exactly. Retrieval stores, compaction, rebuilds, grouping, and fault testing are how durable memory becomes operational rather than magical. If memory changes silently or becomes hard to inspect, agent behavior becomes harder to explain.
Ruzzi and Libafall fit because the more complex the runtime, the more edge case testing we need.
Right. Fuzzing is a way to pressure systems before attackers or users find the strange edges. As AI becomes part of browsers, extensions, local runtimes, and toolchains, fuzzing and security testing become part of the AI deployment story.
Prompt injection is the same lesson from a different angle. Tool-using agents inherit the environment as input.
Yes. Indirect prompt injection matters because the agent is not only answering a user. It is reading untrusted content, interpreting instructions, and possibly using tools. That makes boundaries and control surfaces central.
If we put all of this together, today's pattern is that AI products are moving down the stack.
They're moving into transport layers, local browser components, fuzzing and security infrastructure, vector memory systems, and threat models. That is why the operational questions matter more than the product labels.
Let us make this practical. If you operate local models or agent workflows, what should this Chrome story make you check?
First, inventory. Know which applications can download or manage local model assets. Second, storage and memory budgets. A few gigabytes here and there can become real pressure. Third, controls. Know whether the control is a normal setting, an enterprise policy, a feature flag, or effectively unavailable.
Fourth, network and update behavior. Does deletion stick? Does the model return? Does it redownload on a schedule, on launch, or when a feature is triggered?
Fifth, visibility. A user should be able to understand whether local AI is present, when it is used, and what data path it affects. Without visibility, even a privacy, preserving local model can feel intrusive.
What should a builder take from the OpenAI voice post?
That real-time interaction is a systems problem, not just a model problem. Connection setup, transport latency, global routing, and turn-taking all matter. But builders should also decide when voice is the right interface and when durable text is better.
What should a security-minded developer take from Ruzzi and Libafall?
That modern fuzzing remains a practical tool investment. If older fuzzing paths are in maintenance mode, newer frameworks can keep testing discipline alive, especially for language ecosystems that need coverage-guided testing without rewriting every harness.
What should someone running agent memory take from the Chrome item?
Watch maintenance releases even when they are not glamorous. Rebuild behavior, compaction, grouping, topology protections, and fault injection can shape reliability. But do not promote a release until the operational implication is cleanly established.
What should an agent developer take from the prompt injection item?
Treat web content, documents, and tool outputs as potentially adversarial instructions. The question is not only whether a model can refuse a bad prompt, it is whether the surrounding system constrains tools, separates data from instructions, and logs decisions.
I want to return to consent because it is easy to make it too abstract. What would good product behavior look like for a browser-shipped local model?
A plain explanation during rollout, a visible storage entry, a way to remove or disable the model, documentation of when it activates, and a clear distinction between security critical components and optional AI features.
Would an opt-in be mandatory in your view?
For a large optional AI asset, opt-in is the cleaner trust posture. If the vendor chooses opt-out, the opt-out needs to be visible and durable. A hidden enterprise-only escape hatch is not enough for ordinary users.
A skeptical dependency question still matters. Some users do not want every dependency prompt to become permission fatigue.
Absolutely. Consent theater is bad, too. The answer is not endless prompts. The answer is meaningful controls for material changes, large local models, persistent AI assets, resource-heavy features, and capabilities that alter privacy or compute expectations.
That sounds like a policy triage, routine dependency, material local capability, or sensitive data path.
Yes. Routine dependencies can stay quiet. Material local capabilities need disclosure and control. Sensitive data paths need even stronger consent and auditability.
Where does Gemini Nano and Chrome fit on that triage?
Based on the current description, it fits the material local capability category. It is large, persistent, AI-related, and apparently hard to remove through ordinary consumer controls.
What should remain provisional before we make stronger claims?
Scope, purpose, activation, measured resource use, official policy, and reproducibility. We should not claim more than the evidence gives us.
But we can still say the operational boundary is important.
Definitely. A provisional story can still be highly relevant if the described behavior changes how users should think about control over their machines.
Let us talk about local model routing defaults. In a deliberate local stack, defaults are a design choice. Which model, which host, which fallback, which cost, which privacy boundary.
And the operator can inspect those choices. Silent local model deployment removes that inspection layer. It turns routing into product policy rather than user policy.
For enterprise fleets, the lesson is obvious. Audit browser policies and AI component settings.
Yes. For personal machines, the lesson is to watch for local model assets, browser feature flags, storage growth, and unexplained resource behavior. The practical response is observation first, not panic.
For developers building AI into apps, the lesson is to avoid surprising users with heavy local assets.
Exactly. If your product needs a model, tell users what is being downloaded, why it is needed, how large it is, whether it runs locally, and how they can remove or disable it.
That is the trust contract.
It is. Trust is not only about where data goes, it is also about who controls compute, storage, persistence, and visibility.
Before we close the deep dive, I want to make the user control model more concrete. Imagine two machines, one is a personal laptop and the other is a managed workstation. Should the same silent model behavior feel acceptable on both?
It should not. On a managed workstation, an administrator may decide that a browser component is approved, measured, and controlled. On a personal laptop, the owner is the administrator in practice, even if they never touch policy tooling. If the only durable control is hidden in enterprise management, the personal user is being left out of the governance path.
That distinction is important because local AI can be a good thing. A local model might keep data on the device and reduce cloud round trips.
Yes, and that is why the argument should not collapse into local equals bad. Local can be private, fast, and resilient. The problem is silent local. If a feature claims the benefits of local processing, it should also accept the obligations of local control.
What obligations would you list first?
Disclosure, storage visibility, durable disablement, resource transparency, and a plain explanation of activation. Users do not need a dissertation. They need to know what was downloaded, why it is there, whether it runs, what it costs, and how to stop it.
The activation question is subtle. A model can sit on disk without doing much, or it can be called constantly.
Exactly. Disk footprint is one concern. Runtime behavior is another. A model that is present but inactive has one resource profile. A model that wakes up for page analysis, writing assistance, image tasks, or security scanning has another. The source today raises the deployment concern, but activation still needs clearer evidence.
That is why measured resource use would help. People can argue abstractly about power and memory, but telemetry or repeatable tests would settle more of it.
Right. A useful follow-up would separate download size, disk persistence, RAM use when idle, RAM use when active, CPU or accelerator use, network redownload behavior, and battery impact. Each one answers a different operational question.
How does this connect to climate concern without overstating it?
We can say that browser scale distribution makes the question reasonable. If a large asset is downloaded across a huge user base, even modest per-device costs can become significant. But we cannot assign a climate number without measurements and assumptions. It remains a question to test, not a fact to perform.
For local routing systems, this also creates a naming problem. If a vendor-managed model appears beside user-managed models, operators need to know which path is being used.
Yes. The routing question is not just which model answers, it is who selected it, where it runs, what data it sees, and whether logs or controls expose that path. Silent browser AI makes that provenance harder to reason about.
That matters for debugging too. If a browser feature starts consuming resources or changing behavior, a technical user needs observability.
Observability is the bridge from trust to operations. Without it, the only choices are accept the product default or start reverse engineering. That is a bad place to put ordinary users and an annoying place to put expert users.
Let us compare that with the OpenAI voice item one more time. Voice latency is also invisible when it works well.
True, but the product promise is visible. You ask for a real-time voice experience. The infrastructure serves that promise. With the Chrome model concern, the feature boundary is not as obvious. Users may not know which feature required the model or why it had to be local.
The best version of both worlds would be explicit capability and good defaults.
Exactly. Make the capability visible, explain the reason, choose safe defaults, and give users a durable control. That is how AI infrastructure becomes acceptable as product infrastructure.
The prompt injection story adds one more warning. As AI becomes embedded, the environment itself can shape the model's behavior.
Right. A local model in a browser, a voice model in a real-time stack, and an agent reading web content all depend on surrounding systems. Security is no longer only a prompt writing discipline. It is runtime design, permission design, tool design, and content boundary design.
That is why Ruzzy and Libafall belong in the same episode, even though they sound far away from Chrome.
They are connected through testing. If AI products are becoming distributed systems with local components, browser components, tools, and memory, then we need boring, rigorous ways to find failures. Coverage-guided fuzzing is one of those boring, rigorous ways.
And Chroma belongs because memory is another place where silent state can become confusing.
Exactly. A retrieval store is useful only when its state is predictable. Rebuilds, compaction, grouping, and fault handling are all about making state legible and recoverable. That is the same operational instinct we want from browser, managed AI, make state visible and governable.
The lesson for builders is not to wait until users discover a hidden boundary.
Yes, if a feature changes storage, compute, privacy posture, or security assumptions, surface it before it becomes an incident. A little transparency early is cheaper than a trust repair later.
The lesson for operators is to stop treating AI features as only interface changes.
They are infrastructure changes. They can alter transport, local storage, runtime behavior, memory state, security posture, and update policy. That is the level at which we should evaluate them.
One final practical angle. If this becomes a normal product pattern, procurement and personal setup checklists need to include AI asset behavior, not just privacy policies.
Yes. Ask whether the product downloads models locally, how large they are, whether they update automatically, whether they can be removed, whether controls survive upgrades, and whether those controls exist outside managed enterprise policy. Those questions are now part of responsible software evaluation.
It also changes incident response. If a user reports unexplained disk growth or resource pressure, AI components become part of the diagnostic path.
Exactly. The support question becomes broader, which model assets are present, which application owns them, what triggered the download, and whether the application is allowed to restore them. That is a very different diagnostic posture from simply clearing a cache.
That is a good bridge into the watch posture. We are not closing the case today. We are naming what evidence would turn this from a sharp concern into a settled operational finding.
And that is the right stance. High attention, careful caveats, and concrete tests. That is better than either dismissing the concern or overstating what the current evidence proves.
Put another way, the best outcome is not outrage. it is a clear control surface that makes the local AI layer visible before it becomes a surprise.
Exactly. Visibility first, then measurement, then policy.
Let us set watch priorities for the next cycle. First, Chrome and Gemini Nano. What would change our assessment? H1 would change our...
Independent replication, official Google explanation, documented control paths, and measured resource behavior. Any of those would make the story cleaner. Lack of corroboration would keep it in the high interest but provisional bucket.
Second, OpenAI voice infrastructure.
Watch whether the real-time stack connects to agent workflows in developer docs or product behavior. The voice post is a strong transport signal, but the agent orchestration bridge needs explicit evidence.
Third, RUSI and libFL.
Watch adoption and concrete results. The integration is promising for Ruby security testing, but performance and coverage claims should be handled as project claims until there is comparative evidence.
Fourth, Chroma.
Revisit the release with cleaner source extraction. If the operational changes are confirmed and mapped to memory reliability, it becomes a better agent memory item. Until then, it is a watch item.
Fifth, prompt injection.
Watch for real-world exploitation, details, mitigations, and examples that connect directly to tool using agents. Repeating the general risk is less useful than tracking specific attack paths and defenses.
The common next action is not read everything. It is inspect the boundary each item exposes.
Exactly. Transport boundary, local runtime boundary, testing boundary, memory boundary, and instruction boundary. That is the compact model for the day.
My takeaway is that AI is becoming product infrastructure faster than user control surfaces are maturing.
And that creates a practical responsibility for operators and builders. If AI is in the browser, the voice stack, the fuzzer, the vector store, or the web page an agent reads, then the boundary has to be visible and governable.
The Chrome item is the sharpest version because it puts a large local model on the user's own machine and raises the question of consent, persistence, and resource budgets.
The OpenAI item shows the constructive side, explicit engineering for real-time interaction. The security items remind us that capability without boundaries becomes risk.
That is the briefing for today. The written version has the links and the tighter source trail. The thing to watch is whether the Chrome model story gets official clarification or independent replication.
And if it does, the next question will not just be whether the model exists. It will be whether users get meaningful control over the AI infrastructure that products are starting to treat as default. Thank you.